Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer and WNYC will have coverage as this show continues too of breaking news from Egypt and Jordan and now the West Bank moves toward democracy in all of those places. And we will talk with a number of guests in our second hour today. Also plan to participate in our live chat at 12 o'clock with a few great guests on our politics website, itsafreecountry.org. So all of that coming up as we continue to cover the changes in the Middle East. By the way, CNN reporting now that the Democrats have chosen Charlotte as their convention site for 2012. So it looks like the Democratic convention next year, Charlotte, North Carolina. Well, we welcome in Black History Month now on this February the 1st with a writer who grew up in Texas, fascinated by Harlem. Sharifa Rhodes Pitts writes about Harlem in a new book as a place where dreams and reality collide. The book is called Harlem is Nowhere. And among other things, it talks about the history and future of the cultural Mecca. Sharifa Rhodes Pitts, winner of the Rona Jaffe Foundation Writers Award and contributor to Transition Magazine, will be at the Human Bookstore and Cafe in Harlem tonight at 6 if you want to meet her. And she joins us now in our studio. Welcome.
Thank you. Good morning.
As someone who rides the A train through Harlem twice a day, I always thought Harlem is somewhere. Why do you call your book Harlem is Nowhere?
It's actually a title that I borrowed from the writer Ralph Ellison. In 1948, he wrote an essay called Harlem is Nowhere. It was actually about a free mental health clinic that was operating in Harlem in the 40s and 50s in order to provide low-cost or free health care to people that otherwise didn't have it available. And the essay sort of takes that psychic condition brought about by the situation of white supremacy in America and sort of paints a larger picture of the situation in Harlem.
So nowhere is a good thing. It's kind of a metaphoric space.
I mean, from Ellison in 1948, it was definitely a troubled thing. It was a dislocation. And I sort of pick up his, you know, fascinated by this riddle. I am entering it in terms of a metaphoric space, the Harlem that sort of hovers over the one that we walk through.
And similar to Langston Hughes, Ralph Ellison, Zora Neale Hurston, and countless others, although you aren't originally from this area, you strongly identify with it. How did that come to be for you?
Sure.
In Texas regarding Harlem?
Sure. You know, it's funny. Today is Langston Hughes' birthday. He was born in Joplin, Missouri. And there's a passage where he writes about having loved Harlem before he ever arrived. And in a way, that was very much my experience. It was through the work of writers like the ones you just named and many others that I first came to know this place. Also through photographs, through politics, through music, all of these different strains that are so much a part of what made Harlem the most iconic neighborhood in America.
So you've agreed to read a short stretch from the book. Mm. This is part of a description of your expectations and then actual transition to New York after finding an apartment on Lenox and 7th?
On 120th near 7th. It didn't have a kitchen, which is where the passage starts. The notion that an apartment without a kitchen was ever anyone's destiny has to do with the general desperation of real estate in New York City, but it is a good indicator of how I saw the world then. I needed Providence as an escort on my own ascent from the subway station into Harlem. I, too, was going to meet a place I'd already filled with so many expectations. I, too, would have to match the pictures in my mind, the ones I'd invented and the ones I'd seen in books, with the world that was now my own. But I did not immediately rush out to follow the trails of my favorite Harlem characters. I did not rush to stand before the hallowed sites where history had been made. I did not rush at all. I moved slowly, keeping a deliberately languid pace, because some part of me needed to pretend that my body was still in Texas. And my eyes were still in Texas, too, because I could not give up the habit and did not lose it until much later, of meeting the eyes of everyone I passed. I didn't know, or did know and didn't mind, that it was through the eyes I would be dragged into stories.
And many stories you were dragged into.
I was. There was a moment at the beginning of living in Harlem in 2002 when I just realized that the only way I would feel at home was to know my neighbors. And I know that isn't the most typical of New York ways of being, but Harlem also made that inevitable because it's a place where people stop and talk on the street and stop and greet you. And there's a way of exchange that you can't just sort of run out the door to the subway. Or you can, but I guess the combination of the place and my orientation made that impossible. I was often late wherever I was going because I stopped to talk to my neighbors.
So what's an example of one of those stories that you write about in the book?
Oh, gosh, there's so many. I would say one in particular is a story of a neighbor who came to New York in order to pick strawberries from Mississippi and didn't leave. You know, and sort of the idea that people would sort of find their way north and then stick around any way they could, you know, and many other people who sort of came by accident. Or there's a story that is, you know, less happy that I overheard. It wasn't one that was told directly to me, just passing by. I heard a man say that he had come here by way of escaping a murder that had happened. And there are so many ways that people came here. Some were because of their aspirations and some were because there was no other option. So.
Do you think that you've seen anything through fresh eyes in Harlem that a lot of people who've lived there for a long time may not even be aware of at this point?
Gosh, I wouldn't go so far as to say that, but I just know that because I'd arrived in Harlem through books and politics and all of these sort of myths of Harlem, I was really aware not to let that be the only thing I saw. It's so easy to get caught up in the romance and just say, oh, it's just like the Harlem Renaissance all over again. And that was impossible to me. So I guess I was always sort of trying to find a way to stand in both worlds, you know, to stand in the world of the research I was doing, the books I'd read, the photographs, and then also to make sure I had my eyes open and alive to what was really going on around me.
And really, your book paints a picture of Harlem as a place historically and today where dreams and reality sometimes collide. Did you have that experience?
Well, you know, I guess I already, as I mentioned, had that sort of sense of skepticism of the stories that I've been told. But I think for me and in the book, the sort of moment of the dream and the reality colliding is when I am sort of dragged or forced into the some of the political things going on in the last couple of years. It wasn't something I sought out. It was really something that I was asked. I don't go into all the details in the book, mm-hmm. but just in life, it wasn't something I sought out. It was something I was asked to join. And I'm speaking of the situation with the 125th Street rezoning campaign.
So is gentrification, which is, of course, something that we talk about a lot in New York with respect to Harlem. Harlem isn't even majority African-American anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Something that you were very aware of and became involved in when you talk about local politics?
Sure. I guess the most simple way to talk about it is just the system that I, again, a person that had not been involved with city politics, sort of had a moment of trial by fire or immersion into this world, how decisions get made in the city, the whole process of approving a zoning, and it's something very dry and boring, but it has a huge effect on the way life will unfold.
My guest on WNYC is Sharifa Pitts Rhodes. Her new book is called Harlem Is Nowhere. Talk about yourself as a writer a little bit. This is your first book, a nonfiction piece, and yet your approach and style to the history and realities of Harlem has almost a fictional flair. You like to tell stories, obviously.
Sure. I think for me, there's a way of entering a historical problem through a very simple story that maybe is something that's from the past, something that happened to me, and then it can become very complicated. You can go back into the archives, but sort of just keeping a light touch. And for me, it was always a matter of making the things I was learning at the Schomburg Center kind of occupy the same plane as what I was living in my life, and not to privilege one over the other. I think some people have been a bit confused by whether the book is a history or a memoir, and I guess I just say it's neither, in that you have to trust me on it.
And you can kind of get lost in a good way as to whether you're in the past or the present.
Mm-hmm.
Were you going for that?
Yeah, I think I had the sense of being lost. So if that comes through when you're reading, it's because I was very conscious of kind of trying to stand in both worlds.
We've been asking on Facebook, will Harlem always be the Mecca of Black America, or is it heading elsewhere? And I'll read you some of the responses that we've gotten this morning. Amber wrote, I think Atlanta is already. Sheldon agrees, Atlanta seemed the place from the mid-90s to 2007. Chris says, Harlem can always be the Mecca of Black America if Columbia sells it to the highest bidder and New York City allows it to happen. And adds, here's a question that can shed some light on the issue. Is there any trace of the historic events that took place, like in the Audubon, the stage where Malcolm X was killed? Gentrification doesn't care if there's history that will be erased.
Right. I mean, the last point raises something really important, which is the question of preservation. A lot of people have worked very hard on this issue in Harlem, which is probably under landmark compared to the rest of New York. And there have been some recent cases where buildings that might have been landmarked were not in favor of developing them. So just having that, the trace, the actual material trace of history is important. And it really does affect how the memory and the future of that place will unfold.
In fact, the National Black Theater in Harlem is reported to be closing as it's run into serious debt problems. Is that an institution that you're familiar with at all?
I am, and I'm familiar with it because it is unique in having been an institution, a black institution that owns its building, and was very was a model for the need for cultural workers to have property. So I just read that headline myself. I haven't had the chance to read the story, but sure, it's very important.
Where in Texas did you grow up?
I grew up in Houston.
And what years? I know you moved recently to Louisiana. When did you actually live in Harlem? When to when?
From April 2002 to June 2009. And then I went away to do some work for my writing work, a writing residency. In January of 2010, I was meant to start research on my next project in Haiti before the earthquake happened. And I was planning to be there most of last year and ended up staying in Louisiana because I couldn't go to Haiti.
Still planning to do something?
I am. Mm-hmm. It's I'm not the sort of journalist that will swoop in and wave my pen around, I guess. So I've been waiting for the moment that feels right and just trying to be sensitive to the situation there.
Well, you were curious about Harlem and you came and stayed 7 years.
Right. I didn't set out in Harlem to write a book. I came here to live, and the book was a byproduct of the living. Any other book I write from now on will be much different.
Sharifa Rhodes Pitts, her new book is called Harlem is Nowhere, and she will be appearing at the Human Bookstore and Cafe in Harlem tonight at 6 o'clock. You're going to do a reading and a talk there?
I'm going to do a reading and then a Q&A led by Ron Kavanaugh of Mosaic Magazine and the Literary Freedom Project.
Great. 6 o'clock tonight at the Human. Thank you so much. Pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.